Chapter 44. Now a search was instituted by the Romans to find me, to satisfy both their own anger toward me and the love of honor possessed by their own general. For he considered that the issue of the war depended largely on my capture. So, both the corpses and the men in hiding were thoroughly examined. But, when the city was on the point of being taken, I, as if aided by some demon, had indeed succeeded in withdrawing myself from the midst of our foes, and plunged into a deep pit. But this pit gave access on one side to a broad cave, unseen to those above ground. Indeed, there I found 40 distinguished men in hiding, but they had a supply of provisions sufficient to last for more than a few days. Therefore, indeed, during the day, I lay hid. Since our foes occupied every quarter of the city, but at night, I would come up in order to look for some passage for escape, and would reconnoiter their guards. But, finding every spot guarded on my account, and that there were no means of eluding detection, I again descended into the cave. Therefore, indeed, for 2 days I continued in hiding. But on the third day, my hiding place was betrayed when a woman who had been with us was captured. At this, Vespasianos immediately sent 2 tribunes, Paulinos and Gallicanos, and directed them to both offer their right hands to me and urge me to come up. Accordingly, when they reached the spot where I was, they pressed me to do so and gave me assurances about my salvation. But they failed to persuade me, for my suspicions were based not on the mild temper of those who had invited me, but on being conscious that I would suffer proportionately for everything which I had committed against them. The anxiety that I was being summoned to receive retribution persisted until Vespasiano sent a 3rd tribune, Nicanor. This man was well known to me and an old acquaintance of mine. Now, when he had arrived, he elaborated upon the innate generosity of the Romans toward those whom they had once subdued, and he assured me that my excellence made me rather an object of admiration than of hatred to the commanders. He also told me that the general was desirous to have me brought up from my retreat, not for retribution, for he could inflict this even if I refused to come forth voluntarily, but because he wanted to save a brave man. But he said that had Vespasianos intended to entrap me, he never would have sent one of my friends to me, nor, to use the fairest of virtues, friendship, to cover over the foulest of crimes, perfidy. Nor would he himself have consented to come to me in order to deceive a friend. while I still hesitated, even after Nicanor's assurances. The angered soldiers, indeed, attempted to set fire to the cave, but were restrained by their war chief, who was zealous to take me alive. But both, as Nicanor was urgently pressing his proposals, and as I overheard the threats of the warring multitude, my mind suddenly recalled what I had dreamed during the night, in which God had foretold to me both the impending calamities of the Judeans and the destinies of the Roman kings. Now, I was also an interpreter of dreams, sufficiently understanding the ambiguous utterances of the deity. Yet truly, being both a priest myself and of priestly descent, I was not ignorant of the prophecies in the consecrated books. At that time, I became inspired, and recalling the dreadful phantasms in my dreams, I offered up a silent plea to God, declaring, "Since it pleases you, you who have created the Judean race, to break your settlement. But since fortune has entirely passed over to the Romans, and since you have chosen my soul to announce future things, I indeed, willingly, surrender my hands to the Romans and consent to live. But I call you to testify on my behalf that I go not as a traitor, but instead as your minister." When I had said these things, I was about to surrender to Nicanor. And when the Judeans who had fled with me understood that I was yielding to the entreaty, they surrounded me in a body, crying out,
"Ah! May the laws of our fathers groan aloud, and God himself hide his face for grief. God who has created souls in the Judeans which scorn death. Are you such a lover of life, Joseph, that you can even endure to see a light in a state of slavery? How quickly have you forgotten yourself? You have persuaded many to lose their lives for liberty. False indeed was that reputation of manhood, but also false is that reputation for wisdom. If you can yet hope for salvation indeed from those whom you have warred against so bitterly, or supposing that they grant it, can be willing to have your life preserved by their hands. Not only this, but if the fortune of the Romans has cast over you some strange forgetfulness of yourself, the care of our father's honor devolves upon us. We will lend you a right hand and a short sword. But indeed, if you die willingly, you will have died as general of the Judeans. But if unwillingly, as a traitor."
With these words, they pointed their short swords at me and threatened to do away with me if I surrendered to the Romans. Although fearing an attack, I held that I would be a betrayer of God's orders if I were to die before delivering the message. So in this emergency, I proceeded to reason philosophically with them. I declared,
"Oh, my friends,
Why do we have such a mind to slaughter ourselves? Why sunder soul and body, which are such dear companions? One says that I have changed. No! The Romans know the truth about that! Yet another says, it is honorable to die in a war. Yes, but according to the law of war. That is to say, by the hand of the conqueror. Therefore, if I were indeed avoiding death from the short sword of the Romans, I assuredly deserve to perish by my own sword and my own hand. But if they are moved to show mercy to a foe, how much more should we have mercy upon ourselves and spare ourselves? For it would certainly be foolish to inflict upon ourselves a treatment which we seek to avoid by quarreling with them. For another declares, it is honorable to die for freedom. I concur. However, on the condition that one dies fighting and is done away with by the hands of those who would rob us of it. But in the present case, they are neither coming to fight us nor to remove us from this life. Now, it is equally cowardly to refuse to be removed when one ought to do so, as well as to wish to die when one ought not to do so. But what are we even terrified about that prevents us from going up to the Romans? Is it not death? If so, shall we inflict upon ourselves a certain death to avoid the uncertain death which we are terrified to receive from our enemies? No, it is slavery we fear, it might be told. Are we accordingly enjoying full freedom at present? For another shall declare, it is noble for a man to do away with himself. No, indeed, but most ignoble. And in my opinion, there could exist a no more arrant coward than the pilot who, terrified of a winter storm, deliberately immerses his own ship prior to the hurricane. No, suicide is most repugnant even to that nature which is shared by all living things, and an act of impiety toward God who created us. Yet indeed, among all living things, there is not one that seeks to die deliberately or by its own means. For the will to live is a law so firmly rooted in all of them. That is also why we deem those who would openly snatch it from us to be our foes, and those who clandestinely attempt to do so receive retribution. But do you not think that God is indignant when a man treats his gift with outrage? For it is even from him that we have received our being, and it is to him that we should leave the decision to snatch it away from us. Yet indeed, the bodies of all men are mortal and are composed of corruptible matter. But the soul is immortal and is a portion of God housed in our bodies. Indeed, if anyone who destroys or abuses a deposit entrusted to him by a fellow man is counted a wicked villain, how can the man who casts from his own body the deposit which God has placed there hope to elude him against whom he has acted unrighteously in this way? And indeed, it is considered righteous to punish a fugitive slave, even though the master he flees from is a wicked man. But how shall we endeavor to flee from the best of masters, from God himself, and not be sentenced as impious? Do you not know that those who indeed depart this life in accordance with the law of nature and repay the debt which they receive from God at the time when he who lent it is pleased to reclaim it, indeed win renown which lasts for an age? But that their houses and families are secure? But that their souls remain pure and obedient, being allotted a heavenly place which is holy, from where, in the revolution of the ages, they return to find a new habitation in pure bodies? While the souls of those who have laid insane hands against themselves are indeed received by the darkest regions of the netherworld, but that God, their Father, even brings retributions upon the posterity of those who committed outrageous acts? That is why this crime, so hateful to God, is also punished by the wisest of lawgivers. Accordingly, it is ordained in our laws that the bodies of those who do away with themselves should be exposed without burial until sunset. And furthermore, it is considered lawful even to bury our foes. Now the laws of other nations even direct that the right hand of the corpse with which a suicide victim made war on himself should be cut off, holding that, as the body was unnaturally severed from the soul, so the hand should be severed from the body. Therefore, my comrades, it would be right for us to listen to reason and not to add to our human calamities the crime of impiety toward our Creator. If we think we should save ourselves, let us save ourselves. For there is also nothing dishonorable in accepting this offer from those to whom we have given so many demonstrations of our valor. But if to die, it is honorable to die under the power of those who have conquered us. But for my part, I shall never pass over to the ranks of our foes in order to be a traitor to myself. For even if I did, I would certainly be far more foolish than those who desert to our foes, since they do it for salvation. But I would be going to destruction, yet even my own destruction. However, I earnestly plead with God that the Romans may prove faithless. For if, after offering me their right hand, they do away with me, I shall die content, carrying with me a consolation better than victory, that their triumph has been sullied by faithlessness. Therefore, indeed, by these and many similar arguments, I sought to deter these men from suicide. But desperation had stopped their ears, since they had long since devoted themselves to this death, and they were infuriated with me. So they ran at me with short swords in hand, one from one side and another from another, and called me a coward. But as each one was on the point of striking me, I addressed one of them by name, but fixed my eye like a general on another, but clasped the hand of a third, but shamed a fourth by entreaty. And being torn by all manner of emotions at this critical moment that enveloped me, I succeeded in warding off every one of their iron weapons from slaughtering me, like a wild beast encompassed by hunters on every side, who turns itself against whichever last assailed it. But even in this extremity, they still held me, as their general, in reverence. Indeed, their right hands were powerless, but their short swords glanced aside, and many, in the act of thrusting at me, spontaneously dropped their long swords. But in these straits, I was not destitute of my resource. Instead, putting faith in God's foresight, I put my life into hazard and declared, "Since we are resolved to die, come, let us allow the lot to decide the order in which we are to slaughter ourselves. Now, let the man to whom the lot falls first be killed by the man who has the second lot. And in this way, fortune will take her course through everyone, but not one of us will have to die by our own right hand. For when the rest are gone, it would be unrighteous for anyone to change their mind in order to save himself." The things I said seemed to instill confidence, and they were persuaded to draw lots. Now, I drew one for myself as well. The man who had the first lot presented his throat to the next, in the assurance that I, their general, would also immediately die with them. For to them, the thought of sharing death with me was sweeter than life. Now, whether it happened by fortune or by God's foresight, I was left alone with one other. And since this man desired neither to be condemned by the lot, nor to be left to the last in order to stain his hand with the murder of his fellow countryman, I persuaded him, under a pledge, to remain alive as well. Therefore, this was indeed how I escaped both the war with the Romans and the war with those who dwelled with me.